my family and I didn't have much. He turned the back on me. He deserted my mother and I was a little boy and went off with some other woman that I hated. On and on. I thought, that son of a bitch! The time I needed him, I ran away to sea. I couldn't, because nobody cared. I made a case for, like, and he had me write a letter of amend to him. Can you imagine? And I said, Jesus! This man has ruined my life. Boy, how about an amend to me? He says, he probably owes you an amend, but we're not concerned about him. We don't care if he's comfortable or not. You were also a rotten son. Send him a letter of amend. He says, I want to see it. Okay. Here. He said, no, no. Not an indictment, a letter of amend. And he eventually had me write a letter of amend, and I had me write him birthday cards and Christmas cards, and just hideous. And over a period of time, I went and saw him once, and when I was in Minneapolis talking, I went down to Eau Claire to hate. I went down to see my mother, then over to see him, and I just hated to see him. He had my stepmother gone that day, thank God. I wouldn't even gone in the house, and I didn't feel comfortable. It was just, I wanted to get out of it. I was about 5 years sober. My wife and children had been living in a post office box in Dallas, and they moved to Los Angeles. It was really a trauma for me, because for 5 years I'd been getting by and saying, you know, I've lost my wife and family. I'm alone now. Living over there in Hollywood in that apartment. It's so sad. I'll never see them again, but I send them gifts. I make do somehow. Well, then they moved out. And, it was wonderful for about a day or two. But all of a sudden, my lifestyle changed. I mean, there were a lot of kids racing back and forth, and dogs, and cats, and funny things. And I never got in the bathroom for 7 or 8 days in a row. And you go to A, try to get some sympathy. He said, oh, you must be happy now. You've got your family back, haven't you? And my father called me about the same time. He said, Clancy, Val, who was his wife, died suddenly today, and I don't have anyone to turn to. You're my only child. Could you come up here and be with me? And my instant reaction was, screw you. You destroyed me. Now wallow in it. But I really, right then, three more kids ran through and a dog peed on my leg. Why, yes, I can come up there immediately. And after that, I walked him through it. I didn't want to be there with him because of what he'd done to me. But after the funeral, he and I sat up and drank coffee all night one night. And I couldn't believe it because we got talking. He got talking how he wanted to forgive me for what I had done. And he said, you know, son, and it turned out that what he had felt all these years was a terrible sense of aggrievement. Because he worked, turned out I didn't know this, worked 2 or 3 jobs when I was a kid in the 30s, trying to give me things that he couldn't afford to give me. He worked very hard. He and my mother had some terrible problems, and they separated. But to me, just look, he ran away. He didn't leave. He married this woman who I hated. I hated her because she wasn't my mother. I guess nothing he could do about that. And he always wanted some good things for me, and I punished him by denouncing him and hurting him and telling people that I knew he listened to, that he was a no-good guy. And after the war, I came back, and he seemed to not be interested in me and my family. But I got married, and he'd come over to my house and try to see me. I said, no, we don't want, get the hell out of here. I didn't say it in that way, but I made it clear. My son died. He came down to my jail cell at 6 in the morning and said, Clancy, your son died last night. And it looked to me as though he was saying, I told you so. I said, why don't you get the hell out of here? I guess you're happy now, God damn it. Leave me alone. But as I remember it, all I remember is that he hurt me that morning. And on and on. But he told me an entirely different version of our relationship than I'd ever seen. And I couldn't believe it. I had tears in my eyes. And we started to get along after that. And for the next 20 years, he and I had a closer relationship than most fathers and sons ever had. We got old, moved to our house up in California, and lived there till he almost died. And then he went back to Eau Claire like old elephant, going back to the elephant burial ground, and he went to the Norwegian rest home and died one day, gave me a little squeeze and died. And I remember the next day, 3 days later, going to the Norwegian Lutheran Church, about half as big as this room. Died next to his casket. I was very glad he died because he'd been in some pain. And thinking to myself, isn't that amazing? Because I allowed myself to be steered. I came to believe in my sponsor. And I took actions that made me believe in God. And I eventually, for the last several years, have come to believe that God is a loving God. The same God is in this church as is in my meeting in West Los Angeles. And to think that my dad and I were together. And thought to myself, isn't that amazing? And what's amazing now is when I think by the years I spent in victimization, if I'd have stayed in that victimization, today I certainly wouldn't be sober. And if someone said to me, how's your father? How's your father? I'd say, that guy, child, he psychologically destroyed me. And I would mean it, and I'd mean it till I died from it. But AA made me take steps of recovery. They say, how's your father? He was a nice guy. We had a lot of good years together. I hope he's at rest, and someday I'll join him somewhere else, I hope. But what I'm trying to say is, you and people like you and me are just prey to victimization, because it's the easiest thing to make me feel instantly cleansed a little bit without realizing it's such a lethal price tag to pay for. AA is a program of recovery. That's which we'll never overcome. And I have not had a day go by in over a third of a century that I haven't prayed earnestly for his guidance and thanked him for keeping me sober. And I fail time after time. Probably the nicest thing about AA is this. Most of the people in the world make vows on New Year's Eve and they're going to change their life. And some of them last till January 8th and some last a couple of months and on and on. Every night here is New Year's Eve. And every day is New Year's Day. I say, man, I failed this year, but tomorrow it's going to be a little different. And you don't always do well. And when people tell you they've risen above human emotions, that just means they're too insecure to admit that they still have human emotions. All of us will have emotions. And what Alcoholics Anonymous does for us, it gives me a way to tend these emotions so they don't go into irreversible feelings of difference. Because that's where the lethal life goes to. And that's why it's so important to me when I allow myself to remember to continue to take the actions of AA, not because I'm a good guy. Jimmy said some very nice things about me today. I do so much for AA. I'm a weird guy and I need to do a lot of things to feel good, I guess. Because I'm not a wonderful man at all. I go to work. Most of you know I became somewhat successful after I got sober again. I got back in radio and television and advertising. Did quite well. But for the last 19 years, I run that mission on Skid Row that threw me out. Not because I'm a wonderful man, because it's a gratifying thing. I'll tell you, a lot of times I get in the morning, I get on that freeway going downtown. I live out by the ocean. And my car wants to get off at Robertson Boulevard in Beverly Hills. And it says, let's go up to the tall building where the pretty blondes brought you coffee. And you could press buttons and people would jump. You just did good. Instead of going down to 4th in Los Angeles and see who died over the weekend, or who went crazy, or what guy you were trying to help suddenly just ran away and stole the money off the desk and did on and on, just torture and pain and who's face down choking on their vomit in the sidewalk. I get out of my car and I have to step over dying bodies to get to my office. That wouldn't seem to be much of a thing. But when I go home at night, I drive out that Santa Monica Freeway and I feel more complete than I ever have going down the elevators in Beverly Hills popping my fingers. This in closing. That Alcoholics Anonymous is a viable thing. It's hard for you to believe there are more people sober in this room than were sober in the world when I was 10 years old. You happen to be living, and I happen to be living, at the one time in human history where there's been a group of alcoholics helping other alcoholics to reduce their feelings of difference. And people like you may have a tendency to say, I am too different. You must unlock the door from the inside. Maybe not to accept it, but just at least peek. Little by little. Sit there one more time. Don't run away one more day. When I came off one of my depressions, I remember when I was about 5 months sober, I thought, I cannot go through another one of these without drinking. And I remember thinking, I got to do something. What I did, I wouldn't recommend this to you unless you're in a depressive. But I said, I will never drink again. If it gets bad enough, I will commit suicide. But damn it, I will not drink. And the next, since then, I've had maybe 50 times that's been bad enough to drink. But never once to commit suicide. And I've survived. And it hasn't happened for quite a while, but I know it can happen anytime. What does AA do? Make you wonderful? No. Make you holy? No. It makes you a human being. It turns out AA does exactly what alcohol does, only much more slowly. That's all. AA takes people like me who never feel like they're enough, and most of the time today I feel like I'm enough. Not all the time, I'm a human being. It takes people like me who live in fear. And most of the time today, I am fearless. Not all the time. I find it kind of funny. I walk down alleys on Skid Row, the police prowl cars are afraid to go down with their gun. And I'm not afraid. But I'm afraid sometimes. I'm afraid when someone looks at me funny because I'm a human being. It takes a person like me who lives with hurt feelings and feelings of rejection. And most of the time, I have no hurt feelings, no feelings of rejection. I do sometimes. I have never had an emotion that I don't have once in a while now because I'm a human being. But it isn't an obsession, and it isn't a, it isn't that terrible mummy's cave of different things. They all have different stories. They all have different approaches. They all come from different places, different sizes, different colors, different everything. But the one thing they have in common, they used to drink, and they felt terribly different, and there was no apparent help. And today, they walk with some degree of dignity in the world that alcoholics cannot walk in. And little by little, they're finding they're not as different as they thought. You are not as different as you think. I am not as different as I think. They are not as different as we think. And we can thank a loving God that there's a place for us to go. Thank you.